quotation quartets on the mic first. Here to help you recognize any spoken word. We come before and after titles of short work and placed over any musical excerpt. We work in pairs of two when properly used and hold the last words of the show between you and another. It may be another. Got a posse with us that'll build tech structure, yeah. Pat's period is serious, and Courtney Common will always keep you curious. Quincy question will always keep you guessing, while Eric exclamation emphasizes interjection. Aaron apostrophe keeps words connected, but when he's with the S, shows possession. The bunch waste posse patrol comes together to get you reading and comprehending much better. You can join Triple P on the text tour. We know we're meta text, you as a collector. Where a storm wandering process, pause, pondering, positive, and elevating how you read is no more. I mean, be sure you can do what you want to do and put your best foot forward if you wanted to. A mind is a beautiful thing, so don't waste it and let the punctuation posse patrol teach you the basics.
Let the punctuation posse patrol on the text tour. Keep the text pure so we can be heard. We're the punctuation posse patrol. We protect, serve, and navigate words so they can be birds. We're the punctuation posse patrol on the text tour. Keep the text pure so we can be heard. We protect, serve, and navigate words so they can be birds. Teach them preferred. Now let the learning occur.
Good morning, Connecticut. And here we are at 103.5 FM WNHH Community Radio in New Haven. And we got a show for you today. And just to show you how powerful the show was today, there was an earthquake because we brought the woman who is rocking the world with hip hop and culturally relevant pedagogy and taking it serious. The earthquake was felt from Massachusetts to New York and New Jersey. And it doesn't look like there's any damage. Otherwise, I wouldn't be playing around. But I got a show for you today. I got a show for you with someone that's been doing this work for at least since I've come to Connecticut. And that's been 27 years for me. So I'm sure she was doing it before. But Dr. Bailey, could you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about this earthquake?
So first of all, Harry, I've been doing this work for 40 plus years. I am native New Haven, Connecticut. I'm a product of the New Haven Public School District. I recently retired in 22. I served as a regular and special education teacher, a certified speech language pathologist, and an administrator. I was a school principal, K-8, and district level director of literacy, K-5, and then 6-12 in Bloomfield, Connecticut. So, Harry, I've been at this for a minute.
So you've been at it for a while over there. And yes. And I asked Harry to look at the sort of the topic of the day for us was something you and I have talked about. And it was that piece that what's in your classroom library? What's in the library in your community? What's in the library in your home? That's if you're lucky enough to have a library in the home. That's not always easy. It depends on resources. But Dr. Bailey, talk to us about, because now I'm hearing all this stuff about we're spending $100 million in Connecticut, and it's not the first $100 million we spent on something very similar. And we are getting scientifically based reading research programs, and the boxes are going out and going out everywhere. But your view of curriculum is that old school relevant piece. It's different. It's more than the box. It's more than the program. Could you share and tell us about what should be in my library?
So what I'm going to talk about, Harry, is a piece that lives in that definition of the science of reading. And that is the use of read aloud text within the classrooms. And so everyone has that common understanding that we're going to use read aloud text. But what is not common are the types of text that we should be exposing our children to, even if they have not, quote unquote, broken the code. And I'll talk about what the code entails later, because the code is more than the 26 letters of the alphabet and the 44 sounds. And so when you look at what's in your library, we want to talk about classroom libraries today. There are home libraries, but we're going to talk about classroom libraries. And so when you look at classroom libraries, they often don't mirror the population of the students sitting in that classroom. And we know that there's a center that literally looks at books and analyzes the types of books that are in classrooms. And we're finding that African-American children probably are represented maybe 14% in books. Animals are more than African-American children. White American is represented more than 50%. Latin American, I believe, is in single digits as well. And so we've got to really take a look, because there is a way to teach reading, but if children are not seeing themselves, their identities are not being developed as readers.
As I'm in the midst of the presidency.
They're thinking that maybe they're less than, and that this is too difficult for them. And so when we talk about teaching reading, we also want to talk about teaching content. And so that's where the libraries come in. And I'm going to share the screen and put up a picture of that I've put together of some books that, can we see our screen?
Oh, we can see the screen.
Okay. Now what I've done is I've assembled a series of books, because I wanted to provide kindergarten through fifth grade teachers with some books that they could actually use to begin to help, one, reinforce the language literacy and the comprehension in children, and two, so that children can see themselves and feel good about themselves. So if you see, I've kind of categorized this according to themes. And September is about responsible people. Now, you see how I did that play on with responsible and responsible. Our teachers and our children must be responsible. And I talk about Benjamin Banneker. I talk about Jose Gutierrez. I talk about Pura Belpre. This is the oldest student, Mary Walker. Then you see Carter G. Woodson. And then Arturo Schomburg. And so, when we're reading to kids, in the name of the science of reading, within these books lives those words that need to be decoded, those vocabulary words that need to be defined, those key details that need to be mastered, those text structures that need to be adhered to so that comprehension can live and exist. And so, then you go on to October, you'll see Charles Drew. Now, you don't automatically see these books in the classroom. And you know why, Harry? It's because our teachers don't really have that wide repertoire of materials to draw from. I mean, we're still holding on to Charlotte's Web. Nothing wrong with Charlotte's Web. I love Charlotte. We hold on to a lot of fiction-type books that we read as a child, and we bring them into the classroom, and we have not enhanced our understanding that there are more books in which children need to see themselves and to identify.
And while we're looking at that piece, because you do know that if you're as old as me, you remember these books, and these books, you could see how...
You got Dick and Jane in your hand, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I know Dick and Jane, and you know, there are some people that want to go back to them. But let's, and my grandfather took me, he said, what are you reading in school? Looked at them and he said, those are not real books. Let me take you to the library. But anyway, let's get back to this.
But
this
I want to talk about that, because I have a Dick and Jane book. And yeah. I said, let me go through and analyze in this book. And while they did have two little brown children and a big brother, there were no parents. There was no context of a family structure in which father and mother were working as they were for the little white children and Dick and for Jane. And I said, wow, this is interesting. And they were sort of like backdrops in the story. And so we want to kind of move away from that because children are more than backdrops in a story. And so with that, the birth
let
of...
Me, let me just play on a little piece. You and I have had some great conversations since we last on the radio. And yes. One of my heroes is Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop, whose research focused on Black adolescent boys when they were exposed to stories that they were in. And lo and behold, guess what? The comprehension improved for them. Yes. And lo and behold, the comprehension of young white boys reading those stories did not improve. So just a piece. But she always reminds me, and so Dr. Sims Bishop is a friend. And she said, Jesse, it's not just about the mirrors. We all need to be seeing those windows. The way we build respect for each other is by hearing the positive narratives of each other. She said, so white children need to see these books. Black children need to see Hispanic books, Asian books, all kinds. She said, this is how we build America. And that can't be lost, that we are not, that it's an America of this 21st century, beyond that Dick and Jane days of old, is an America that's a diverse, beautiful symphony, and we should celebrate it over there. So I love that concept. But now I know that the books are important, and I'm an old Bible school person.
I want to touch base on what you just said, because you brought up something very, very important, and this is a piece that I intend to fully continue to write about and maybe put more prevalent in my writing, and that is all children need access, because while we may be diverse cultures, we have common pursuits, and the work that these different people have accomplished have benefited everyone in America, if not the world. And so that knowledge is rich and needs to be known. We're not only denying children of color access to quality literature, we're denying all children. And they're not getting the full knowledge of how this country was built, or the full knowledge of the excellence that they can aspire to. So when we talk about a Patricia Bath, who created the laser phaco probe, which is key in creating cataract surgery, I've had cataract surgery. African Americans are not the only one benefiting from cataract surgery. So why can't all children know about that? And or why can't all children know about Vivian Thomas, who actually created the procedure to operate on blue babies when there was an epidemic of babies dying from a syndrome that nobody could understand. And he wasn't even medically certified, but had the training, train the doctors, and created the procedure. Isn't that information vital for every child? And so my question always is, this is not just a movement so that children, African-American children and all children can have access to quality literature. This is a movement for all children to have access to quality literature. But more importantly, children who have been disenfranchised and marginalized and made to believe that they weren't intelligent, that they had nothing to offer. And see, that's the lie that has to be like disseminated, or not disseminated, decimated. And we need to really be careful, because when children don't feel good about themselves, that's when the behavior problems come. So we want to invest all this money in culture and positive behavior. Well, all we have to do is invest in literature that will give us all of that. And I say, if we're going to teach that A is for apple, can't we teach that A is for achieve? That B is for beautiful.
Yes, it is. It is. It's this, and it's important to look at curriculum as living and breathing. And I began to say, there's some old school, you know, church kid in me. And when you went to, you go to, you know, so I'm a Christian, I'm not selling religion to people, but there's the first reading, the second reading, the homily and all that stuff. And I couldn't read it at the time. My mother used to slap me in the back of the head and said, listen, you can hear it. This is the word. And I remember that concept. So, and it's the piece that while we're building that code, and I know we're going to come to it, while we're building that decoding, while we're getting that phonemic awareness, that phonics, that fluency, that vocabulary, we can learn so much more with it.
Exactly.
So we got that component. It's important. But if I tell people that I'm an old ghetto child, and you know, I always tell people I was a homeless kid. Yeah, I get that. You know, but I didn't see my first novel until I was in the ninth grade, because we had curriculums that looked just like this, and I didn't see anybody that looked like anybody in my community. So it's kind of interesting that we had that. And yet I was at the library. Well, guess what? Mm-hmm. The library had us all. So talk to us a little bit about that. That are we saying that we don't need to teach children the code?
No, we are not saying that at all. First of all, and I started with this, I am a certified speech language pathologist. I specialize in the development of language and the disorders of language. I am frontline with reading. We unequivocally need the code. That is the first line, that is the foundation, but it is not the finish line. It is the foundation. And also, this is not a sequential thing where you first have to learn to break the code and then you can have access to quality literature. That is not what we're saying at all. What we're saying is simultaneously, while we are teaching the code, we have to simultaneously develop children's oral languages. And this is how we do it. But also, Jesse, this is something that I'm going to talk about that's not often talked about. And that is, the code is more than 26 letters of the alphabet and 44 sounds. The code are the digits, the 10 numbers. The code are the punctuation marks that you heard as we were coming in. Courtney comma, Patsy period, Eric exclamation, Quincy question mark. We need our children to understand that these symbols carry meaning. And if they don't understand that, that's when comprehension breaks down. The code is also a dollar sign, a decimal point, an equal sign, a less than, a greater than. These are all codes that children encounter in text. And I'm going to give you an example. Because I believe in examples, no small potatoes. And so I'm reading this book about Junius P. Groves. And right in the story, it says, how many potatoes had Junius Groves grown that year? And these are the numerals. 72,150 bushels. Now that's a whole lot, right?
That's a lot.
So if a kid can decode that, that's all and good. But if a kid doesn't understand what 72,150 looks like written out and then has no concept of a bushel, there's no meaning there. I was a word decoder. And so I caution that we kind of lean more toward ELA and reading, but learning to read needs to live in every content area. And that's kind of my segue. So in math class, the code that they're decoding are those numbers, are those dollar signs, those periods, those question marks, when we're asking questions, because this is very serious business. We tend to be myopic when we talk about the science of reading and what it entails, but it is so much more, and the code is so much more than an alphabet. A period is also a decimal point. How do we tell children the difference? Right? They both look alike, don't they?
Well, they look alike. They look alike, and we're not supposed to talk about context right now, so I don't know. The only way I would know is I'd need some context.
Let me tell you, context is extremely important. And what I think that they're saying with context is that kids are not going to be able to figure that a letter C-A-T, they don't want them looking at a picture of a cat, but they want them to be able to phonemically and phonetically read that. But we have to talk about context is very important, because we give off the thought or the thinking that under no uncertain circumstances should we be relying on context. And that's just not true, because there are multiple meaning words. And how do you know how to pronounce a word if you're not looking at the context of where the word is written? For example, read and read. They're spelled the same, aren't they? Well, based on subject-verb agreement, it will tell you whether it's past tense or if it's, will you read this or I read this. And so we have to be very careful. The code, if I had to reinforce anything, the code is more than 26 letters and 44 sounds. Context is extremely important. And we also have to build children's oral language development simultaneously. We have to build their knowledge base. We have to read different picture books and not all the same. And I have nothing against animals, and I have nothing against cutesy stories, but we've got to lean more toward literary nonfiction. And we've got to make sure that our students are understanding what it is that we are reading based on the questions that we ask. We also have to make sure that we're reading in social studies, in science, in math, in careers at the same time. And I want to add that this is not something that we have to say, okay, we have to stop this now, and we have to build their social emotional development skills. All of this can happen simultaneously, because when I'm reading about, and I'm going to talk about, I'm going to talk about Virginia Apgar. Now, Virginia Apgar is a white pediatrician who created the Apgar test. And so when reading that, I learned that, one, she had a sense of achievement. Two, she had self-confidence in herself, because at the time that she was growing up, women weren't doctors, but she saw herself as a doctor. She had self-control. She had discipline. She never gave up, even though she was discriminated against. She never gave up. She had interpersonal skills. She knew how to work with people, and she had empathy. So aren't I addressing social emotional intelligence now?
You are addressing it. You're addressing the important things. Last night at Newington Elementary School at Elizabeth Green, the CCSU Literacy Center went out into the community, and my teachers were doing their helping with a family literacy night. We create tables and stuff. And one of the tables I think you would love, and the theme for them was readers are heroes. You know, which schools have been doing, readers are heroes. And so we have all these displays and games and activities. But theirs was carrot traits. And it had like this image, and they had all these cool books and all these things. Could you give us the traits? And when you looked at the table, you see, you and I know what we found. We saw those great traits of a great human being, and black, yellow, brown, white. They were all on the table. And the kids were going wild reading them, but I watched the table. It seemed to be an activity, a chance to. We had lots of tables, but this one was really active, and the kids were there. But yes, they saw that stuff. So it reminds me, you know. So going back to that old thing, my mother saying, you know, listen,
Well, yes.
What good is it if all I do is break your code or break the code? It's our code and mm-hmm. it's important. I'm not saying it's not. But if all I can do is that, and I don't know about Benjamin Banneker, I don't know about Drew. Yeah. I mean, anybody whose life has been saved by plasma, by blood transfusions, I don't know. If you don't know Dr. Drew, you don't know anything. You know, something's mm-hmm. wrong over here, this concept. But yeah, so it's the stuff you and I have talked about before. We are what we read. And so I think that's what you're talking about when you say, what's in the classroom library?
Well, we are what we read. And I'll help you even to break the code. And I keep drawing on Patricia Bath because I just love her work and what she's done. But let's break code. Let's talk about suffixes that allow you to create nouns. So she was an ophthalmologist, IST. She was a philanthropist because she donated things, IST. You see my point?
I'm seeing the point.
I'm now generating vocabulary based on the code that I've now learned because I'm learning the who. Benjamin Banneker. He was an engineer, EER. He was a mathematician, CIAN. We can do this all day, Jesse.
There is not a text. I can go to any text. I could go to the Torah. I could go to the Quran. I could go to the Bible. I could go to any sacred text in the world, and I will find phonemes. I will find blends. I will find vowels, long and short. I will find prefaces, suffixes, roots of words. I will find language in every mm-hmm. text. And if we taught our teachers, and this is why, because I want to come up next, because you do some special work. If my teachers understood that all the science of reading, it's in every text you have on your shelf. So the question is, yes, it's in there, but what else can you add? So when I'm over there, I'm thinking, you're telling us, yeah, we're not enemies of the code. Not at all. No. We're not enemy of that. But we do want more. So tell us a little bit, because people may not know.
I think that's the more that we talked about. Not only do we want more, but we want to connect it. We know the brain is a pattern-seeking device. The brain learns best when it can make sense of what's in front of it. So when you look at creating stories, that's why people can remember things more if you put it in a story. Or even the song. We learn the punctuation marks through singing the Punctuation Posse Patrol. We learn about the role and function of the different, because we've put it in a connected piece that is brain-friendly. We've taken 7 to 9 discrete pieces of information and we've made them one. That's the purpose of the stories. And you said something earlier about the training of teachers. I think that's where we are now. We have to help build capacity in our educators to make sense of what the research is actually saying. And then how do we create a curriculum that's comprehensible, that's inclusive, and that makes sense. So we're not only looking for scientific, we're looking for systematic, and we're looking for sustainable. Because we need this to last. And I'm really not opposed to the efforts to create something to get this done. Because like I've said, we're on the precipice of failing our children, African-American in particular. And so we have to create a system. Systems work. Our body is an example of systems. If you break down our circulatory system or our respiratory system, we're in trouble. And so we need a system that's going to work. And at the foundation of that system, for lack of a better word, is the classroom teacher. It is what happens in that classroom that works. Leadership is extremely important. But when it gets down to it, are we adequately training our educators to meet the needs of the children that are sitting in front of them? Are we building their capacity to have a repertoire of these materials, because I'm going to tell you, Jesse, that's what needs to happen.
So
yes, they need to learn how to teach the breaking of the code and to teach that. But what they also need is they need a rich repertoire of literature that's going to support our children academically, personally, socially, and emotionally. That's going to give them language, vocabulary, context, and content. And that is only going to come through professional development that is delineated. I mean, our policies, they speak loosely. They'll say they need professional development. They'll say we need to be diverse literature. It needs to be culturally responsive, but we need to operationalize that. When we say culturally responsible, what are we talking about? When we say diverse, what are we talking about? When we say we're going to have a 90-minute block, that's not going to help. How do we build capacity in our educators when they're teaching social studies and science that they're going to do these same things? Because literacy is a skill. It is not a subject. Reading is a skill. It is not a subject.
And when we think about that concept, when we really look at literacy at its base, it's got a foundation skills of knowledge building. And that is, yes, it's listening. We forget, that's Gaffel's reading. We got that. Viewing, that's Gaffel's, the whole thing. And then the productive processes, we've got speaking, writing, visually presenting. And so whenever I see kinds of curricular focuses that don't understand that literacy is broader than all the, that if you're not including all those things, and I have a little simple thing I do with my teachers all the time, is like, if the children in your class are reading about something, let's say they're reading about Benjamin Banneker, right? Yes. We're reading about him, and we're talking about him, and we're listening to each other talking about him, and we're writing about him, and we're viewing the images that he's doing, and maybe we're even making a poster for, you know, Benjamin Banneker Day. And if we do that, I say, will their comprehension go up? I have never had a teacher say no. All of them say it. And but they do say, give us the time. Give us the time and give us the materials and give us the support and give us the PD. Because I want to get down to there's what you're known for is your consultancy. And you've done consultancy in if I'm right, Bloomfield, Harford, New Haven, I think Middletown. I think you've been all over the state.
I've been all over. I've been all over. Oklahoma, South Carolina. I'll be going to Texas next month. So you're absolutely correct. And I'm glad that you're focusing in on the consultancy, because what I like to really impart to teachers is, one, we have to stop operating from the deficit model. You are not here to fix kids. I always say, we have to build our capacity to empower children to succeed. Kids don't get smarter unless teachers get smarter. Kids are not the only things broken. Our system is broken. If we don't provide adequate professional development and build capacity in our educators to do this, then it's not going to get done. And as soon as we look at this as a holistic approach and saying, okay, we're going to build capacity in our teachers to be able to do this, then we're going to see some things change. And I think the real power is that collaboration. I'm going to stop sharing this and put up another slide that's going to speak to this collaboration. And I like to talk about interdisciplinary teaching and learning. Now, can you see that, Jesse?
I can see it.
Okay, so let me try to bring it up some. This is some work I'm actually doing with Middletown Public Schools. And Middletown Public Schools, their assistant superintendent for teaching and learning, Stacy McCann, is, working with her curriculum leaders. And they came up with an awesome idea for summer school. And they're calling it Summer Literacy and Math Science. They want, and social studies is in there, they want to look at an interdisciplinary approach with read aloud texts And my job is to work with them and show them where their standards live within particular books. So we're going to look at George Washington Carver. Now, first of all, you do know that elementary teachers are general education teachers. They don't necessarily specialize in all of the content areas. However, we require them to know the standards for English, math, science, and social studies. That's over 100 standards. And we require them to teach these standards to the children with some kind of efficacy. Well, I'm going to tell you now, that requires a responsibility on our behalf to build their capacity to do that. And so this is an attempt that Middletown is putting forth to show how simultaneously we're going to work together. We're going to break down our silos. It was beautiful. You had the math directors, the English directors, the science directors, the social studies directors, everybody together talking about where their standards lived in George Washington Carver. So let's go across. We're going to look at ELA. We're going to focus on key ideas and details and vocabulary. And you see those standards. Ask and answer questions to demonstrate understanding of a text, referring explicitly to the text as the basis for answers. Now, let me just let our listening audience know. The aspect of the science of reading that I am now talking about is comprehension and vocabulary. Those are two very important aspects that don't get as much as play as they need. But that's where Dr. Bailey focuses, comprehension and vocabulary and knowledge building. And so if you go across, this book becomes also a social studies text because we're looking at disciplinary concepts and tools. Now in social studies, and Connecticut has just revised their social studies standards to align with the 3C framework, which is college, career, and civics. And so when we look at the C3 frameworks, there are four disciplinary tools, and they are civics, economics, geography, and history. They have classified content in those four areas. Again, very brain friendly, and it helps focus the learning. So with George Washington Carver, we're going to look at geography. We're going to look at the human environment and the interactions. And we're going to explain how culture influences the way people modify and adapt to their environments. So in layman's term.
What we're talking about. Oh, you're back now. You froze for a minute.
Okay. Oh, good. I'm glad.
You're back. So, Bailey, you froze for about 30 seconds.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. In layman's terms, George Washington Carver was very instrumental during the Great Depression because cotton was ruining the soil. He created a process for regenerating the soil. That's the human interaction on the environment. He said, we'll plant cotton one year, and then we'll plant sweet potatoes and peanuts so that we can regenerate the soil. Very instrumental. We're learning some very good key ideas and details. We're learning vocabulary, but we're also learning geography and the human impact on the system. But let's go next door now and look at the science. The three dimensions of science. Let's talk about Earth and space science, one of the disciplinary core ideas. And what? Guess what? We're also learning about the human impacts on the Earth system. Science and social studies are articulating with one another. So we're doing three things now. We're looking at how society has had major impacts on land, ocean, and atmosphere, and how those activities can also protect the Earth's resources and environments. Well, that's what George Washington Carver did. He protected the Earth's resources by regenerating the soil. And then when you go and look for the standards for mathematical practice, you know, George Washington Carver had to reason abstractly and quantitatively. He looked at the cycles of growing. So that's a time thing. That's a sequence thing. So now in one book, those children, they're going to take a week with this book, and those children are going to learn about the Earth's the human's impact on the earth. They're going to learn about some very key details about George Washington Carver. They're going to learn tier two and tier three vocabulary, and they're going to also reason abstractly and quantitatively. That's the power of a picture book, Jesse.
You know, it's interesting that we're talking about George Washington Carver. So I've visited hundreds of schools in China. So I've made two visits in China. They're kind of interested in my views of balanced assessment over there.
Yes.
And things are not, China, there's a big distance between us now. But when I was there, they're high school teachers in one of the schools. And when we talk about high schools in China, we're talking about 10, 15,000 people. We're talking about a university. We're talking about major, major pieces. But coming back to the science teachers, in a Shandong province school, asked me, they said to me, "Do you know George Washington Carver?" and they said, "Have you been to Tuskegee University?" So I just want you to know, so you know the conversation that followed from that. And what they were really interested in was what you just said, that agricultural science that came out of Tuskegee University helped China face the same kinds of problems. How do we turn peanuts into 50 different foods? How do we make soybeans? All of that. And the Chinese were reading about George Washington Carver. Now, the teachers may not have known that it's been a while, but they were still reading the science, and it was still informing them. So these are the conversations that I think our high school students, our middle school students can be having.
Yeah.
I think
definitely.
The stuff they can have that, and the teachers. So I just want to come back to this other piece over there.
Okay.
They're spending $100 million. And,
yes.
And the difference between your PDs, and I have teachers who have been sat through your PDs. You have never begun your PD saying, "What you have been doing is wrong. Everything you were taught was wrong. You are wrong." And that polarizes. And there are some PDs that maybe we have good science and we want to have these discussions, but if we begin like that, so we're always and with my teachers in here in our literacy center, I always say it's not what you do, that's the standards, that's the conduct, but how you do it is what invites and engages and motivates and inspires students, and that's what you do in your consultancy. You help them understand the how you do it. You could do it. We can't change the standards. We can't go back and say, "Well, those standards are no good anymore. We'll make your own." But what we can do is saying that you can do it differently, and that stuff. So I'm thinking about if you had a way, right? Because you know the show goes quickly and stuff.
It does.
10 minutes away or something, or maybe even less. But what I want to know is, there's $100 million being spent right now. And I educate teachers, and my teachers are saying they're not getting the PDs they need, they're not getting the resources they need, and they want, they're getting the sort of like the shout down, "You're wrong," but they're not being given the capacity, and they're reporting that back to me, and they're saying, "We want the capacity. We want those books you talk about, Dr. Turner. We need them. But do you know that book that you showed me last week, I looked it up on Amazon and it was $26, you know, and I'm a young student who can barely pay the bill for this master's degree in that sense." So you have any ideas about how to spend that $100 million? At least let's say 50. Let's do it half and half. 50 goes.
Let me tell you something, Jesse. I'll even go better than that. I would love an opportunity to help them to do that with regard to providing the pedagogy for the teachers, because that's what they need. They need the knowledge base and the libraries as well. Let's take a fraction of that money and invest it, because it will be an investment that will be scientific, systemic, and sustainable. An investment in some rich literature that we can accompany with the programs that they are advocating. Because I will say, There are a couple of those programs that I fully believe in, I honestly do, but they need to be coupled with some rich literature. And while they have rich literature contained within the textbooks, children need actual books that they can hold. They don't need to read it on a computer. They need to hold those books in their hands, and you know the research says that that is the best way. Let's get some sessions where we're going into books, because I'm gonna go back and talk about Middletown for a minute. After I sat down with those directors and coaches, do you know the math coaches went back? They took the whole set of these books, and I'm gonna go out there and say, and every single one of those coaches and directors are non-Black. And they took these books, read them, and sent me a document with all of the math standards aligned, Jesse. They had saw the potential. They said, look, Dr. Bailey, we got the math standards that go with these now so that we could add to the chart, and we're written, and they bought in. They saw it. It was the professional development. It was the collegial conversation about how to do this, and at the same time, carry out our responsibility. And I think, and I don't ever want to go on record to say that I do not believe in the science of reading, and that I do not believe in standards. I proceed from standards, but like Goldie Muhammad, we need more than standards. We need to educate, equip, empower, esteem, and edify. And that means that when I read something, it's going to give me the skills I need to function in society. I'm going to feel good about myself, and I'm going to edify society, my country, or the world. And that's what Goldie Muhammad talks about. She's not against standards, but she says we need more than standards. And that's what she means. We need to be read-sponsible.
Read-sponsible. I'm going to read-sponsible. Use that. I'm going to use that. So in class, on Monday, I have a class that I'm going to love doing that with. But there's also another piece I want to pay homage on my shows. I pay homage to my teachers.
Yes.
So today I'm going to pay homage to Mrs. Stanfield. Who's Mrs. Yes. Stanfield? Well, when I was a big old stupid football player, I was in her honors English class, and I tried to get by. One morning I woke up early because I forgot to do the essay that I was supposed to do, and I quickly wrote it with the Eggo waffle in my mouth and with the syrup on the paper and probably 100 misspellings and things like that. And I handed it to her, and so Mrs. Stanfield is a Black educator who came from North Carolina to come educate us ghetto boys and girls in Jersey City, New Jersey. And she came to help us. But one of the things, she sat me down, she said, okay, class, everybody's essay can be improved. I got to work with this our defensive end who thinks he's too cool, you know? And she sits me down and she breaks down that paper with 100 red marks on it and said, how do you spell this? Well, oh, you can spell it there. How come you didn't spell it right in the paper? Oh, what, you ever hear of a period or a comma? You know, and that stuff. And we went through that. But years later, so she takes me from the athlete to the scholar. Because she sat there the whole class, and this is the stuff to help one kid understand who had the potential to be more. And so when I go over there, I say, let me tell you, okay, you know, so when I graduated college, I graduated from
Jersey. She equipped me.
And so when I graduated, she came to my graduation and she gave me a tie, Amazing Grace. And you can see it's all falling apart. I don't know what to do with this over there, but it's all falling apart. And we knew the story of Reverend Newton, the slave ship captain, who in the storm, and that whole stuff. But it was just interesting in that point. And I want to, and I'm making this point for another reason. It doesn't matter the color of our teachers, but I will tell you something. Research points to one thing very clearly, that Black children who are exposed to one Black teacher.
That's right. Black,
I hope we're in Senator Gary Winfield's district right now. He's over there. I know Gary's a good guy, but you should be listening to this over there when we talk about our mandates and our programs. one mm-hmm. black teacher for a black child increases, doubles their potential to go to university. But one more piece of research.
It does. It really white does. Kid,
she was the black teacher. There was mm-hmm. another piece of research that's in there. That research also says that all children, regardless of their color, their chances of going attending higher university are improved by just having one black teacher. Here's to you, Mrs. Stanfield. I love you.
That's right. And that's very, very powerful. And I say this because we really have to get serious about educating our children. And we have to look at what's being put in front of them, because that's the determining. The task really does predict the performance. We can't, and I call it a Crayola curriculum. We've got to move away from this Crayola curriculum where we circle, underline, and fill in the blanks. Our children need to think critically, they need to speak, and they need to write essays, and they need to write constructed responses. And they need that higher level of thinking. And I call it driving a car through text, Jesse. I talk about they need to be able to conduct a critical analysis, an analytical analysis, and a rhetorical analysis. And when you conduct a critical analysis, your analysis is based on history, social cultures, political cultures. It's based on history. That's how our writers write. That's how our orators write. They always proceed from history. They give you context. That's the baggage that's in the trunk of the car. That's what they're talking about. And then there's an analytical analysis, which actually comes first. But for the purpose of the brain mapping, the CAR, analytical is breaking down the text. What's the vocabulary? How is it structured? What are the themes that the author is putting forth?
And that's not baggage. I've got this.
That's what's driving the car. That's not the baggage. That's the nuts and bolts in the car, the steering wheel, the GPS. That's all of that. And then there's the rhetorical analysis, the engine, what drives the car. That's the words. How are the words structured? What metaphors are being used? That figurative language. Children need to be able to understand that as well. And if we don't begin to seriously teach our children to drive a car through text, to conduct a critical, analytical, rhetorical analysis, we can hang it up.
And if we think about it, it's why when people talk about the word, they're not just talking about W-O-R-D. They're not talking, no. They're talking about something bigger. And that piece, and when children in our literacy center, they're dying for meaning. Whenever we can connect, it's called hot cognition. Hot cognition is science, and hot cognition is when I can tie a positive emotional to something that you're learning, you're going to keep it in your long-term memory. So if I just teach without that emotional connection to you, that I guess the steering wheel in the car, the purpose of what we're doing. If I do that, that's the stuff that, like the old spelling stuff, when I was in school on Friday, we took the spelling test and I forgot to spell it right on Monday over there. But I made sure I got an A on that spelling test. But, you know, but that kind of concept over there. So, yes, we've got that. And we've got this great, it's like this beautiful symphony of a people. There are people, Yahoo Williams, who's the provost out in, I forget, one of the Minnesota colleges, is a friend from Connecticut. And he always says to me, he did a TED talk for us here. And he said, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator. You know, all that concept over there. And he turned around and said, that's the aspiration. It's not necessarily the reality, but it's the most beautiful aspiration we have. And I am telling our teachers, and I'm telling our legislators, if we can connect to the aspirations of who we are as a people, guess what? Mm-hmm. They will be reading and singing and dancing. They will paint that. They will do it all. The subjects will make sense. And you're saying, what you were saying was the standards are there. So we're thinking, we're getting down to our last minute. So give us the last sound out, because then the music's going to start playing and Harry's going to say, get off the air, you people. No, and thank you, Harry.
Definitely. Again, educate, equip, empower, esteem, and edify our children through diverse texts where they can, create identities and where all children can get those missing pieces that have been out there. This text invites it all. It satisfies as an element of the science of reading. Let's capitalize on that, and let's capitalize on vocabulary, comprehension, and fluency. And fluency in the sense of, let's break all codes. The punctuation marks, the numbers, the math symbols, all codes have to be broken. And unless our children can break all codes, they're not going to be strategic readers. They're just not.
Maybe that explains a lot of things that we're seeing at universities with kids not engaging with the readings they need to do.
Yeah. They can't read text features, Jesse. They can't read visuals. They can't read tables, charts, graphs, maps, because we don't teach them. That's text. Load it with codes.
Load it with all the codes. And if with we thought about codes. That, and I'm sure we're going to have our music playing, but yes. Really, I say to people, I say, we can do better. I don't know, when I ask people, can we do better? We can always do better. Let's do better with science reading. Let's do better with reading. Let's do better with building the capacity of our teachers to take our students to new heights. Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Thank you. We're going to have to do this again.
Definitely.
Pat's period is serious, and Courtney Common will always keep you curious. Quincy questions will always keep you guessing. Why Harry exclamation emphasized interjection. Aaron apostrophe keeps words connected. Quincy with the S shows possession. The bunch waste box patrol comes together to get you reading and comprehending.
That's my son-in-law, by the way.
You know, we're in the family.
Where a storm wandering process, pause, pondering, positive, and elevating how you read is no bore. I mean, be sure you could do what you want to do and put your best foot forward if you wanted to. A mind is a beautiful thing, so don't waste it, and let the punctuation posse patrol teach you the basics.
We're the punctuation posse patrol on the text tour. Keep the text pure so we can be heard. We're the punctuation posse patrol. We protect, serve, and navigate words so they can be heard. We're the
punctuation posse
patrol on the text tour. Keep the text pure so we can be heard. We protect, serve, and navigate words so they can be heard.